floorboard sighed and crackled beneath him as the brawler staggered through the blaze. He made it 2 steps back toward the stairs. He felt a deep crack somewhere far, far down. Then the floor gave out under him. Suddenly and all at once, he flung himself toward the door, hardly felt his fingers blistering as they closed around blackened wood and ripped the floorboard loose as he plunged through the flames. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off in a desperate bid to keep Paul and her boys out of the Jackdaw's clutches. Lee willingly hands himself over to Killam's beatdown. As always, if you're not caught up yet, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description so you can check that out there, as well as a couple of short recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, let's get on to the good stuff. I'll catch you guys at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Colosseum. Hatham's marching feet had led him deep into the Silvers. He was halfway to the brink before the blinding rage that spurred him on dulled to an icy hate. He'd almost had him. If the spider's cell sword hadn't been so cautious, they could have put a volley of quarrels through the back of the bastard's carriage before he knew what hit him, and a second volley to finish the job. No witnesses, no mess. He spat another gobbet of blood in the runnel on the alley floor. He'd bitten through his cheek when the sellswords tackled him. Suppose he'd gotten off easy. His neck was raw from the Qadari pressing one of those long, curved daggers he kept up his sleeve to Hatham's throat, snarling in his rough desert tongue that he could kill him right there. The brawler had scowled and dared him to do it. He'd never seen the sellsword so angry. Even the other cutthroats under his command seemed nervous at seeing Randall's face, normally so impenetrable, freely betraying his fury. Not for the first time, it struck Hatham that someday, like as not, someday soon, he and the Spider's Man would lock horns. But not tonight. Not when the sellsword had 6 comrades at his back, and the brawler's only friend, the boy, was halfway across the city, and about as useful in a fight as a head of cabbage. Not when every Greycloak in the Golden Quarter was closing in on their position, and Elias was in the wind. He glanced back over his shoulder at the jagged, moonlit corridor, as much to check for the sellswords as the keepers. He'd been surprised that Randall let him go, and he'd marched on for several minutes, ready to break the first hand they laid on him before he accepted that they weren't going to try and stop him. Even so, he didn't put it past the sellsword to have one of his men tail the brawler to whatever grog shop he passed out in. He couldn't go home, that is, back to his borrowed room across the way from the Eidolon. It was too close to where he'd shot at Elias. It'd be swarming with Greycloaks already. And if they cornered him with Sparrow in his bed, they'd clap her in irons just for knowing him. For the brawler, it'd be worse. Blood for blood. There was a reason why the crest of House Femerial was a severed head. He felt some guilt about the bastard's driver, but it was in a muted, far-off way, like those fleeting pangs of sympathy when you heard about some terrible tragedy happening in distant lands beyond the Jaw. He'd killed before, watched innocent men die. It was the way of things. It was the driver's own piss luck that he'd gotten between Hatham and his prize. The brawler was under no illusion that he was a good man, or that God was on his side. The priests and the mummers would judge who was good when they wrote their histories. All anyone could do in this life is take what he sought. Any man who didn't was lying to himself. He'd crossed into the coppers, with its rotting wooden walls and broken gates of rusted iron. The spider had outfitted a safe house near the south lift with cots and beer and enough hardtack to last him until Blackport fell into the sea. Once White Rose was dead, the plan was to lie low for a few days until the heat died down, then hitch a ride out of the city tucked between sacks of flour in the back of a covered wagon. Then, the wide world. Em could join him in Araling if she liked. Brayden would be waiting for him at the safe house. He could already hear the Gray Man's reproach, same as the sellswords. How Hatham may well have buggered their one chance at dropping Elias. He didn't want to hear it. He had enough pennies in his pocket to find whatever grog shop was still selling and drink until oblivion took him. Kingmaker could give him his lashing tomorrow. He caught a faint whiff of something burning. That wasn't especially surprising. In the winter, every alley from here to the brink was scored by char marks from beggars and street boys burning old crates and broken barrels to keep the chill off. It wasn't unheard of for whole neighborhoods to burn when an errant spark caught a thatched roof of a copper apartment. No, it was the clank of armored boots behind him that struck the brawler. He knew the sound of approaching keepers like his own voice, and without a backward look, he darted down a neighboring alley and dropped into his familiar ready stance. He glimpsed two sallets out of the corner of his eye. He could handle two, especially two of the half-trained striplings who drew the midnight watch. He'd be on them before they knew they'd been hit. The Greycloaks appeared at the alley's mouth, and Haytham barely caught himself before he could dart out of the alley and tackle the first one. The two soldiers didn't break their stride. They jogged right past the brawler's hiding place, the fog of their breath dissipating on the crisp night air in their wake. He saw anticipation on their flushed faces. His eyes narrowed. Despite himself, Haytham slipped out of his alley and crept along behind them. The wood smoke smell thickened as the keepers plunged through a faint haze at the alley's mouth and disappeared around the corner. Haytham heard voices, loud and anxious, too many for so late in the evening. Dimly, he wondered if Kingmaker's fight had started a riot. It wouldn't be the first time. Liquor and blood sports made a volatile mix. He jogged around the corner and stopped dead. It was an inferno. The leaping flames added another two stories to the building's height, and a thick column of white smoke plumed into the black sky overhead. Haytham's mind flashed to the inn on the Hinter, to the slaver's wife staggering out into the night, her body silhouetted by flames. Unlike the driver, he felt not even a faint twinge of guilt for sending them both to hell. A long column of figures snaked from the blaze down an alley, passing heavy buckets from one to the next while the foremost dumped them into the flames with a hiss before running back down the alley toward the river. He saw men and women in their nightclothes scurrying out of the apartments on either side, arms heavy laden with all their treasures in the world to save them from the flames. Still more folk were busily soaking these rickety wooden structures to keep the fire from spreading to the rest of the coppers. He wasn't sure if he first recognized the mismatched house, the tired wooden structure sagging beneath its own weight as the upper floor's windows burst one after the other like the multicolored crackers that young boys were always hurling at each other during Hinter harvest festivals, or if it was the voice of the old woman, shrill and strained with panic as broken glass showered the cobbles like falling hail. Whichever it was, it made his blood run cold. The two Greycloaks who were running ahead of him had joined a knot of others who were handling Paul, while another half dozen formed a perimeter a few yards in front of the blaze. The old woman was a wreck. Her hair on one side was matted with black blood, and her left cheek was a mess of dreadful purple bruises. Her eyes were bloodshot from crying. The heat of the flames had baked her cheeks dry.
"Please!"
Haytham heard her sob, even as two of the keepers broke off to intercept him.
"You have to. My son, he's still in there."
The boy. Still staggering toward the old woman, he scanned the bucket brigade desperately for the telltale angular shape of the thief. Nothing. The sergeant who was consoling her was gentle but firm.
"I'm sorry, ma'am. That fire's too hot to put my men in."
The brawler was still a dozen steps shy of her when one of the Greycloaks caught him with a hand on his chest. It took most of Haytham's willpower not to break his wrist on reflex.
"Stay back,"
the guard warned in his rough lowlander accent, jerking a thumb toward the long column passing buckets toward the blaze.
"You can join the bucket brigade. Paul!"
The old woman and the sergeant looked up at him as the two keepers caught him by the crooks of his elbows and tried to force him back. Haytham dug his heels in, the veins in his neck bulging as he bellowed over the roar of the flames.
"Who is it? Who's in there?"
"Mr. Haytham."
He felt the answer in his gut even before she said it.
"It's Lee. He's hurt."
He shrugged off the men holding his arms and lurched toward the sergeant. the other keepers cursing and hurrying after him. Too late did Hatham realize that his hood was down, and dimly he hoped that none of these gray cloaks were looking at him too closely, or were fans of the fighting pits.
I'm going in there.
The sergeant balked.
Like hell you are. Then you go.
The keeper just stared, his nostrils flaring, flames reflecting off his salad. Hatham turned to one of the guards who'd grabbed him. The man's hand was hovering close to the hilt of his sword.
I need your cloak.
The keeper started to protest.
Just give it to him,
snapped the sergeant. The guard looked strangely naked without his distinctive cloak, his chain shirt gleaming like fish scales in the firelight. He looked on hatefully as the brawler drew it around his shoulders. Hatham turned toward the bucket brigade. He felt an armored hand on his shoulder, and he looked back. The sergeant kept his voice low.
If you go down in there, no one's coming after you.
Hatham stared for a long moment into the sergeant's mud-colored eyes, bloodshot from the smoke, and nodded once in acknowledgement.
I need this.
The brawny young farmhand holding the bucket at the front of the column looked like he was going to object, until he saw the look in Hatham's eye. He passed the brawler the heavy bucket, a little river water sloshing over the side. Hatham took it in both hands and raised it as if to drink. Paul and the gray cloaks were all watching him, his broad shoulders framed in front of the blaze. So were many of the people in the column. Over the crackle of flames, he heard a few snatches of the old woman's entreaty to her god to protect him, protect the boy. He raised the bucket and upended it over his head. The water was bracing, and he gasped as it soaked through the layers of the keeper's thick cloak, his own cloak, his tunic. He drew both hoods and pulled them low over his eyes, water sluicing between his fingers and dribbling into his eyes. The smoke was his biggest worry, and he took a fistful of wet fabric and pressed it to his mouth. Then he grit his teeth and charged into the inferno before his resolve could waver. The instant he was through the door, the heat struck him like a blow to the chest. The floor was a bed of red-hot coals. The flames clawed holes in the walls and raced eagerly across the ceiling. Hatham raked his gaze across the debris, his mind conjuring phantoms in the dancing smoke. He resisted the urge to call the boy's name. He could already taste the acrid smoke as he breathed through his rapidly drying cloak. The blackened boards cracked underfoot as he plunged up the stairs. Black spots danced at the edges of his vision. His mind flashed to that first night when the boy had saved his ass at the dram house. He'd have gone for higher ground, the brawler reasoned. He'd have tried to escape through an upstairs window. The door to the upper room was splintered and slightly ajar. It crashed open under Hatham's boot. Several of the cots were blazing bonfires, and bits of burning straw fell from a large and growing hole in the thatched roof, white smoke escaping like souls from the void. The air was hazy. Smoke stung his eyes and made his vision swim.
Lee!
He saw a black shape huddled against the wall behind one of the burning cots. He called the boy's name, roared it through his cloak. The figure didn't reply, didn't move. Floorboards sighed and crackled beneath him as the brawler staggered through the blaze, curses threatening to escape from between his clenched teeth. He caught a mouthful of hot ash and doubled over, coughing and spitting and clawing at his tongue. He threw a hand up to shield his face from a snap of sparks as he spun past the burning cot and scooped up the boy. His fingers closed on smoke. Like light through a prism, the moment Hatham reached the shadowy shape at the foot of the bed, the figure moved, now next to the opposite bed, now hovering near the fire-rimmed hole with the black night overhead, now sprawled at the heart of the flames. His head spun, desperation thudding in his ears as sweat ran down his brow.
Come on, boy.
He felt himself growl deep in his chest.
Where are you?
He made it two steps back toward the stairs. He felt a deep crack somewhere far, far down, felt it in his knees like distant thunder. Then the floor gave out under him, suddenly and all at once. He flung himself toward the door, hardly felt his fingers blistering as they closed around blackened wood and ripped the floorboard loose as he plunged through the flames. He smashed through the second floor like a rock through a window, boards falling all around him in fiery fragments. It knocked the breath out of him, but slowed him just enough that when he crashed to earth in the sitting room like a falling meteor, he didn't shatter with the impact. nor leave a crater a dozen feet deep. Even so, his skull bounced against the floorboards, and he nearly faded, sprawled amid the burning debris. His vision flickered, and it was a moment before the several dark holes in the ceiling converged into one image. His back was pressed into a bed of hot coals, his awareness of them quickly rising as they scorched through his cloaks and tunic. He tried calling the boy's name again. What came out was a coarse, wordless snarl. The mismatch house replied with its own throaty groan high above. Through the smoke, he almost didn't see the burning caught in the boy's high room, teetering on the edge of the hole with 2 feet over the brink, over the brawler. Hatham rolled, his hands raking orange coals in every direction as the cot dropped on him like the hammer of God. It crashed to earth where he'd lain an instant before and exploded in a spray of wood shards and burning feathers. He threw up a hand to protect his face, hardly feeling the splinters that pierced his forearm. The ancient structure sagged under its own weight. He might have only seconds before the whole thing came down on his head. He swatted at fiery feathers that swirled around him like fairy lights and retreated staggering through the kitchen. In the end, he didn't find the boy. He nearly tripped on him. Lee had made it halfway through the kitchen, Hatham saw, before the smoke or the heat had gotten to him. He was sprawled on the hot stone floor with one arm still outstretched as though grasping for the door. Hatham didn't bother checking his injuries or even confirming that it was Lee or that he was still alive. There wasn't time. He hooked one arm under the boy's neck and one under his knees, kicked open the door, and staggered out into the black night. Paul and the rest were still waging their one-sided fight against the inferno when Hatham came stumbling around the corner. Smoke billowing off his shoulders, the keeper's cloak, and his own, hanging off him in tatters. He heard someone shouting, hoarse and incoherent like a baying hound, and only when it broke into a fit of coughing did he realize that the voice was his own. The old woman lurched toward him, her eyes welling with fresh tears, hardly noticing when she was nearly bowled over crossing the line of the bucket brigade by 2 stable boys hefting a long, brimming trough between them. Several gray cloaks clanked after her, including the sergeant, who only smothered his look of astonishment when he reached the brawler. He muttered something, shaking his head. Hatham wasn't listening. Paul recovered quickly and took charge, ushering the brawler and the cloaks into one of the ramshackle apartments across the street. A table had already been cleared, and at the old woman's direction he laid the boy upon it. He vaguely remembered Lee saying something about Paul serving as a battlefield nurse before she found her way to the edge, and now he saw the years melt off her as she directed the young couple who lived there to fetch her supplies from the kitchen cupboard and sent one of the keepers scurrying down to the penny store to commandeer whatever else she needed. It was only as she went to work, after he'd handed off responsibility for Lee's life to Paul, that Hatham allowed himself to look down at the boy. It was awful. The worst of his injuries weren't from the fire. Someone had beaten him badly. It made his stomach clench. He reminded the brawler of one of those poor sots who, after 6 tankards, convinced himself that he could hold his own in the pits. Beneath white blisters that swathed his whole face, his nose was broken, and both eyes were a swollen mess. Black blood caked one side of his face from 2 fresh gouges that crisscrossed the stripes he'd earned at his second meeting with the brawler. His lips were split and slightly parted. His breath was a dreadful, wet rattle. Hatham knew that sound well. He'd broken more ribs than he could count.
"Who did this?" he heard himself whisper.
The old woman didn't say. Her lips were a hard, bloodless line, her hands trembling only slightly as she worked. He hardly felt his own injuries, although he did accept a long pull from a flask that the sergeant produced from under his cloak. If the keepers recognized him, they didn't say. And after the guard who Paul had sent came back from the penny store, the sergeant dispatched the rest to help with the bucket brigade. He himself stayed, his hands clasped in front of him, and Hatham was strangely thankful for his company as he kept vigil. At some point, he felt a tug on his fire-blackened sleeve. He turned to see the pale, mousy lady of the house holding one of her husband's well-worn tunics in a neatly folded bundle. He ducked into the kitchen to peel off the burnt, bloody tatters he was wearing, and when he came back, the vigil had swollen to nearly a dozen as Paul's other boys filtered through the open door. They were somber and stoic, and a susurrus of whispered prayers filled the cramped room as they looked on. Flickering orange light from the window cast long shadows across haggard features as everything they owned burned a dozen paces from where they stood. The last one through the door was a man, long and gaunt and unfamiliar. He wore a heavy overcoat and a businesslike demeanor, and the first of these he stripped off and set his big black valise at the end of the table with a thud.
"I came as soon as I heard," said the doctor, rolling up his sleeves with an air of authority.
Haytham and the sergeant traded a look, but Paul immediately acceded to the newcomer's help. He drew several leather pouches from his valise and instructed her on how to grind them into a poultice as he clucked over the boy. The brawler went to the window and peered down the long street. He saw the carriage immediately, plain black and tucked among the shadows of an alley 100 yards down. He felt the sergeant's eyes on him as he slipped outside wordlessly and padded down the long street. The dray wickered as he approached.
"He's the best doctor in the city,"
came the gray man's voice, low and slow and slightly slurring.
"If your boy has any chance, he's the man to save him."
"Someone got to him,"
Haytham muttered. He could smell the poppy through the carriage door.
"Someone after me."
"Oh? What makes you so sure?"
He didn't have an answer, only the lead weight of guilt like an anchor in his gut. He should never have let the boy in. He was barely on the edge of manhood. He didn't know what he was saying yes to. Haytham did, and he'd let him in anyway. And if he died? His jaw tightened. He tried to recall the excuses he'd made only days ago, all the reasons he had for allowing the boy into their plans. He found that he had none.
"I'm gonna kill them," he swore,
to himself and the spider. Kingmaker ignored him.
When it's over."
The brawler noticed how he studiously avoided the phrase, "if the boy dies."
"There's a house waiting for the old girl. And her boys. No one sleeps on the street tonight."
Haytham tried to respond, but the smoke had chafed his throat raw, and the words wouldn't come.
"I am sorry, Haytham."
Exhaustion had sunk leaden fingers into Haytham's limbs. His mind was too foggy to tell if the spider meant it.
"Thank you,"
the brawler rasped.
"I'll send someone with the address."
At a word from the gray man, the driver, who hadn't acknowledged Haytham throughout his exchange with the spider, flicked his reins, and the carriage rattled on toward the keep and away from the fire. He stood there for a long time in the alley, and only left to relay Kingmaker's promise to the old woman. He remained at the boy's side until dawn. Thank you guys so much for listening. It really does mean the world to be able to share this story with you. It has given me a ton of encouragement in recent weeks just to see all of the new people who are interacting with this story for the first time. So if you have just caught this story in the last few weeks, I just want to say thank you for checking this story out and wading through 20 some episodes to get to where we are now. As always, it is a huge favor if you leave a like or a comment on the video. And if you're catching this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, you can leave a 5-star review to let this story reach more people. All right, that is enough from me, and I will catch you all next week.